Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is The Truth About Sales. And I am your illustrious, nefarious host, Joel Rico. And we're just barely getting warmed up. So the first 2 or 3 weeks, which is now, we're doing a lot of setup and learning some context, and we're doing some self-evaluation skills. We're learning, you know, how to get in rapport, some of that. And then we shift into doing a bunch of foundational language. That'll be starting next week. And then we do several weeks of learning structure and tools. And then we spend a couple of weeks doing objection handlers. So the intention is that we every week builds on the next, builds on the next, builds on the next, and we keep putting a layer on, a layer on, a layer on. So that's kind of what's going on. So fun today, I think, is a really easy call. The technique that we're doing today is pretty straightforward and kind of fun and kind of easy. And it's a little transition from where we were last week. So we're taking on a process today called level shifting. And in order to do that, we have an interesting rapport theme today. So that's going to be really, really fun. And hopefully it'll be super insightful for all of you as well. So as usual, before we jump in and do a bunch of new stuff, let's do a little check-in and see how are you doing with the old stuff. So our first call a few weeks ago was focused predominantly around the 360 review. So let's do a little check-in. Did any of you do a 360 review from call number one that you didn't do it the first week, that maybe you got caught up and did one this week? Or anybody still doing those and still getting, still harvesting good stuff from that exercise? Anybody have one of those that you'd like to share, want to ask a question about, anything like that about the 360 review? Questions, comments, anything? Right? Or how about last
week?
Man, last week was an interesting one. Yes, question, comment, something.
Hi. Joel, this is Jonathan Riley in Chico.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hey there. Yes, I've continued to do some. I did 7 the first week, and then I did a couple more. Just was getting so much out of it. I definitely caught a couple of some similarities and some ahas that really I was already kind of thinking about, but it was like it kind of slammed me in the face a little bit. So it was giving me a lot to chew on.
Like what, for example, if you're willing to share? What slammed
you in the face? I had a executive assistant for about a year and a half, and before letting her go, and it was a situation where I probably should have made that change a lot further before. I let it affect me and my business just way too much, and so you know a lot of my peers you know saw what was going on there, and so. You know, what came out in that was, you know, questions about, you know, me as a manager, you know, and how I could have been better in that regard. So it's definitely has me thinking about, well, what my next step is and how I want to tackle that or where I need to improve and so forth.
And so did you get any, did you get any insights about that? How are you as a manager? I mean, clearly somebody shined the flashlight on the issue. And did you wrap your mind around, like, where is it in that process that you're dropping the ball? Did you get that?
I didn't get that from my peers, but just as I was been processing it, it's just where I think I'm dropping the ball is, or where I think I have dropped the ball in the past there was just doing a better job of, okay, here's the account of, you know, here's the expectation and then holding it accountable. That's where I definitely fell short.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the key, you know, to, you know, setting up accountability circles. And then as you're really growing, then you can only have a couple of people, 3, 4 max, that you can hold accountable. Then you have those people hold the people below them accountable.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, and then also for me, Joel, just for me, the other truth that I have to look at is, you know, thinking of being entrepreneurial versus E2P. The other part of that it forced me to look at is how much of that is me not wanting to hold those others accountable because that means I have to be held accountable.
That's right. That's right. So for those of you that don't know that model, E to P means making the shift from entrepreneurial to being purposeful. Yeah, and the greatest thing that you can do, like it's my belief that I can't convince anybody to do anything. However, what you can do is you can be highly, highly accountable, highly focused, high on time, be your word, be accountable. And then, you know, you're just really living the example. And the people around you are going to be doing it too, or they're going to fall away. Right on, Jonathan. Really good ahas from that exercise. Really good. Bravo.
Joel, this is Sam from Valencia.
Hi, Sam.
Hi. One of the things that I got out of the 360, again, last week in our call, you made a comment kind of in passing about you're not interested in the positive, you know, the what are your strengths answers, because moving on, what you're really looking for is where are the weaknesses. And that stuck with me, and so I went back and I read what the positives, because I was with you. I'm like, yeah, who cares about that? But it actually was insightful for me, because I think that when I rest on my laurels, I rest on a lot of those things that people said were positives. And it kind of gave me insight on what to be aware of by, like, not letting my ego get in the way, basically, and clouding my understanding of my weaknesses. Because it's really easy to go, oh, great, I'm glad you feel good about those things about me. I don't know if that makes sense, but it caused me.
No, you lost me. You lost me. So how, I mean, I think that reviewing the positives that people say about you, I think it's good for our confidence. It's good for our self-esteem. Yet, unless you're lacking and needing confidence and self-esteem, me personally, I don't feel that I grow very much when somebody says, oh my God, Joel, you're so good at this. I'm like, oh, thanks. Yeah, whatever. So where the place where I feel that I grow is when somebody says, dude, you're dropping the ball over here. What are you doing? Oh, and that's a place where I think I can learn. So
that's
your position.
Yeah, I think I was a little convoluted. I agree with you, and I would knee-jerk say, oh, yeah, that's how I think. But it kind of revealed as I went back and looked at it that the times where I'm not willing to hear where I need to improve or what my weaknesses are, I rely back on what people say are the strengths. And I go, oh, yeah, see, I'm awesome. See, you think I'm great.
Yeah.
And it just kind of was a little, I don't know that you meant it to be that way, but it was a little like prick to go back and say, oh, actually, I say that I blow off the strengths, but really I hide in the strengths when I don't want to deal with
them. Ah, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
There it is. I'm not blowing off the strengths. It's a place for me to hide. But honestly, that's why I don't really give the strengths much weight, because it's too easy to hide.
And right, that's kind of what I realized when you said that comment.
Yeah, that'll
get
you.
I'm like, oh, that is a good point.
Yeah, that'll get you. Yeah, good aha, Sam. Awesome.
Thank you.
Wow, really nice ahas, people. Wow, that's awesome.
Hey,
so
Joel.
Thank you for sharing that, Sam. Yes.
You bet.
Quick question. What are we supposed to do with this stuff now?
Which stuff are you referring to?
These understandings of our challenges. Clearly we want to overcome them, but Are you suggesting that there's are we supposed to be working on a certain means of overcoming them, or are we just supposed to be conscious?
You know what you've probably heard this thing. They say it in I'm not AA, but they say it in AA meetings. They say until you admit that you have a drinking problem, there's no possible way for you to heal it. No, I'm not an alcoholic. They keep drinking. So the first step in having any sort of a change is awareness. It's impossible to change until there's some sort of awareness that a change is needed. And so my goal in giving you all this exercise is for you to find the places where things aren't working for you. And I don't know what that is for each of you. So I've given this exercise to lots and lots and lots of people over the years. And I've had people come back and find things like, wow, you know what, the overwhelming response that I got from people is that I'm pushy and I don't listen to anything they have to say. They're telling me that I have my own agenda and, you know, they don't want to talk to me because I'm beating them over the head with my intentions. and I'm not listening to them. And that everybody says that my conversations are totally one-sided. Well, as a salesperson, that's critical that you know how you're showing up in the realm of other conversations. So I don't know. Maybe you got something really powerful and vital out of this exercise. And depending on what you learned, maybe it's something that needs an action plan. I don't know. What was the biggest takeaway you got from doing this exercise?
I mean, for me personally, I mean, the biggest takeaway was that I'm pushing my agenda. It's funny that you said that. That I am.
Yeah.
I'm not listening enough. I'm busy like telling people what I think is right, what I think is, you know.
Wow. Wow, look at that. So I just, like, maybe it's my intuition getting better. I just totally, like, pulled that out of thin air, and it was the one that was for you. Wow. So I would take that, right? So I would take that as if people think that about you, that you're totally just wanting to tell them what you think is right. Hopefully going through the rest of this curriculum is going to shift this for you. Yet, you know, you might want to look at, are you being righteous about stuff? And what is right? What is right and what is wrong, right? Aren't those just perspectives?
It's not so much that. It's more of a thing where I've got the subconscious message saying to myself, if I impress them that I know what I'm talking about, they'll want to do business with me. But that's actually not the case, is it?
It's not the case. It's not the case. So, you know, forgive me if I've used this example in this class before. I love this example. Let's say that you have a dentist problem and you have a really bad toothache and you go to the dentist and you walk in and you go, oh my God, my tooth, oh, it hurts really bad. Oh, right here. What do you want the dentist to do? Do you want him to impress you? Hey, come on in. We have the best state-of-the-art office and look at all these plaques and diplomas I have. I have the best machines in the world. I do more root canals than anybody here in the Tri-County area. I mean, do you want him to impress you? Or do you want him to say, oh, my goodness, come on, sit down. How long has it been hurting? Great. We'd like to give you an x-ray and take a look at it. You have a pacemaker? No? Okay, come on in. Let's get an x-ray done. By the way, do we have your insurance on file? Do you have a ride home in case we need to sedate you? Are you allergic to any painkillers? I mean, do you want him to impress you or do you want him to help you or her to help you? I want him to help me. So there's a place you're coming from a position of let me impress them versus let me help them fix their problem. So maybe that's the thing for you to get. It's not up to you to impress them. Doesn't matter if they like you. One of my mantras, I literally have this on the wall above my desk. It says, what other people think about me is none of my damn business. I'm here to help. They like me? Great. If I help them, they'll probably like me. If I do the dog and pony show and try to get them to like me, then it's going to be either a yes or a no. They're going to like my dog and pony show or they're not. But if I help them, they're going to think I'm great. Whether they like my haircut, whether they like the way I dress, whether they like my car, it doesn't make any difference. If I help them, they'll like me. So anyways, I hope that was helpful. All right, so that was I want to ask one more question, and then we'll progress a little bit. So the question I first asked was, what else did you get out of doing the 360 review? That was week number one. Week number two last week was the criteria questions. What's important to you about moving? What's important to you about a bigger house? What's important to you about moving to the ocean? What's important to you about retiring at 50? What's important to you about whatever, right? What's important to you? What will that do for you? What will that mean for you? And we also took on, if you had time, to get some of their decision-making criteria. How do you decide which car to buy, which stock to buy, which realtor to choose, which house to choose? How do you decide? How many times do you read that? Who else do you consult with? How do you make these decisions? Right, to find out, how does this person process? All right, so any ahas, any feedback, any breakthroughs that you had from doing that stuff in this last week?
Sam again, Valencia. Hi.
Hey, Sam.
okay, I did this on anybody and everybody that I could. Just
awesome.
It blew my mind. So I'll give you one example, and it was, and I told the person that I was doing it with, hey, I'm just going to practice this. It was the same day. Actually, it was last week. So I said, hey,
nice.
I just learned this today, and I want to practice this on you. Not a client, just a friend. And I said, I'm
nice.
Just going to act like you're a client. And I just made stuff up. And I said, so if you could buy a house, what would it be like? And I did it with other people, not about houses at all, but about their family life. And I just did anything and
Good.
Everything I could. But this one was
Good.
Really
hang on,
powerful.
Hang on one second. Hang on one second. I want to give a quick plug to everybody. What Sam is doing right now I think is critical. Make sure that when you practice all the stuff that you're getting in this class, make sure that you practice it everywhere, not just real estate, not just business. Practice it everywhere. Trust me, you'll get fluent 10 times faster. All right, Sam, go.
Totally. I asked her, again, not a client, not a homeowner, single, no family, et cetera. And I said, so if, I asked her, like, hey, if you want to buy a home, what kind of home, what features of a home would be important to you? And I went through the three questions, and by the end of it, she was almost in tears because she
yeah.
had never identified in her own life things about growing up and why she wanted an open floor plan and why she wanted a kitchen that had X, Y, and Z. And I got to the end of it, and I had told her it was practice, right? So I said, okay, tell me
yeah.
how you feel. Like, what happened in this process? And she goes, I thought I was going to help you do some script thing. And
yeah.
I realized I never knew I had these feelings from when I was a child growing up.
Yep.
And it just kept happening. Whoever I did it with, those are the kinds of things. And I thought, man, I thought I was good
yeah.
at asking questions before, but this is amazing.
Yeah, and I think what one of the things that happens in doing this is, number one, it forces you to make the conversation about them. What's important about this? Oh, that's amazing. And what would having that do for you? Right? It forces the conversation to be about the client, right? Which is something we could all use help with, myself included. And what it also does, I think Sam really hit the nail on the head, is it helps people to identify things that are important. It has them, like, dig up resources. It has them find, like, what is important about that to me? What would that do for me? What's the significance of this in my life? Why do I want this thing that I want? Right? So right now, you know, most of us process really unconsciously. Oh, my God, I want that new Mercedes-Benz. Look at how sexy it is. Oh, my God, I want it. I want it. Why do you want it?
Mm-hmm.
What would that do for you? And if it did all that, what would it mean for you to have that? Right, and what happens in this process is people come to the place where they say, oh, that would be the ultimate symbol that I've made it. Oh, this would be the ultimate thing that I was a good parent for my children. Well, this would mean that I would be having an environment to raise my family that would be, right, whatever it is that an open floor plan meant for this woman.
Mm-hmm.
So by
well, and the other...
Go ahead.
Sorry. The other thing that I learned in it was, so in the last year, I've learned that progression of the questions, why is it evokes negativity and judgment, and then you move up the line to the questions that create openness. And
yep.
so I learned in this process, too, that my go-to is why. Why would that be important to you? Why would that do whatever? And really trying to retrain and just reframe it, like, what about that is important to you? And because I thought
yeah.
I'm sabotaging myself if I'm using the question in and of itself as a negative judgment, even though I don't mean it, they don't know I mean
yeah.
it. But that was
a big
one.
Well, why is really a double-edged sword?
Yeah.
Why is a double-edged sword? I mean, it can be the best question ever, and it can bury you if delivered not the right way. So, yeah, be really mindful about using why, especially in our society now. We have a very negative bias in society. So if you just ask somebody why, and they're, well, because this is wrong and that's wrong, and it spins a lot of people into the negative.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, be really mindful about that question. Right on, Sam. Brilliant.
Thanks, Phil.
Brilliant.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Aha, breakthrough questions about anything we've done so far? Or are we ready to jump into new stuff? Going once, going twice. All right. How about some new stuff? So, as usual, we're jumping into some new stuff right now, and I can't... Just a little preframe here. I can't promise you that learning all the material in this course is going to be easy nor automatic. What I can promise you is that if you're willing to commit to this training, you will absolutely continue to have breakthroughs in your ability to communicate with others and in your ability to inspire others to work with you and in how you show up in all of these relationships. Right, consider that example that Sam just did. She was just practicing with her friend and literally brought her friend to tears about an open floor plan and what that means. This wasn't even somebody looking for a house. Now, if that was a real scenario, you know, you brought up this whole emotional torrent inside a client that's like, I want my open floor plan. All that happened because of you. So now we're learning this entirely new realm of communication. So today we're going to take on a slightly different piece. We're going to explore what I like to call meaning, understanding and meaning. This is the fun one. Each week of this course is in a specific order for a specific reason. So there are some weeks that are really challenging and some weeks that are really easy, and I feel that they really need to be in this order. So, all right, so today we're going to take on two things. We're going to take on a new rapport game. All right, so we did mirror and match them, right? If they talk loud, we talk loud. If they talk slow, we talk slow, right? Get in sync with how they communicate. Speak their language. Here's an exaggerated example. If you had a client that spoke Japanese and one that spoke French, how would you talk to them? Well, you'd speak Japanese to the Japanese one and French to the French one. Fortunately, most of us aren't in that position. What you're going to get is you're going to get one that talks really loud and one that talks really soft. So you talk loud with the loud one, and then you speak softly with the soft one. Right, and get synced up. All right, so here's another layer of that game. Today, the layer we're going to take on the rapport game is called the primary representational system. So all of us, human beings, all of us, we interpret reality through our five senses. So sight, sound, touch, taste, smell. Right, this is how we know what's there. Right, I can feel that this is a desk because it feels like a desk. I can see that it's a desk. I can see it. I can knock on it and hear it. My senses are confirming that this that I'm sitting at is a desk. I know it's a desk because my senses tell me they are. Now, the way in which we interpret the world, taste and smell are almost never used in this example because unless you're Helen Keller and your other senses are dead, those are very personal experiences. And those are typically not the way we interpret reality in relationships. So the ones that really dominate us are sight, sound, and feel. So consider everybody has all of these senses. And the goal here is to find out, and everybody has a dominant sense. So you do all of these. You know how to see and hear and feel and touch and taste. You know how to do all those. However, we all have a dominant one. Some people, their primary representational system is visual. Like, I see it when I believe it. In fact, their primary representational system being visual is so dominant that they'll actually say things like, you know, we're talking and talking and talking, and they'll say, do you see what I mean? What do you mean, do I see? I hear what you mean. I understand what you mean. I feel what you mean. Do I see what you, right? They're so visual that it shows up in their speech. Can you see what I'm telling you? You appear upset. Consider the difference between, wow, you look upset. Wow, you sound upset. You feel upset. So we all have a primary system, and there are three. There's technically four. They are visual, auditory, and kinesthetic, VAK. And then in the last, I don't know, 10 years of the study, they've added another one to this group, which that they call auditory digital. That's kind of self-talk. So if somebody is primarily visual, like nobody's 100%, but if they're primarily visual, they'll say things like, do you see what I mean? Can you see what I'm saying? That's clear as a bell. That looks great to me. You look upset. You appear upset. Right? Those are just signs that your client processes visually. Now, if your client says, do you see what I mean? And your primary system happens to be auditory, you might say, yes, I hear you loud and clear. And they say, I don't get that you see what I'm showing you. Do you see what I'm showing you right here? Do you see this? And you go, yeah, man, I hear you loud and clear. So they're speaking with a dominant visual bias, and you're speaking with a dominant auditory bias, which conveys the message that you didn't really get it, right? Because they want you to say, yes, it's clear as a bell. All right, so our rapport game this week is for you to just, you know, listen. And as you speak to people, see if you can identify what is their primary representational system. So I gave you visual examples. If they're auditory, they'll say things like, that's loud and clear. I hear you. That sounds great. That rings a bell. Hey, listen to me. You know what? To tell the truth, wow, you really sound upset. Those are all clues that the person has a auditory bias. Right, I hope you're scribbling in some of those examples in those blank spaces. They'll help you later. What if your client has a kinesthetic bias? Right, kinesthetic means to feel. So the client will say things like, oh, yeah, I feel you. That feels great. You know what? I don't feel very good today. You know, let's get in touch with what it would mean for you to sell this house. Wow, this home inspector's a pain in the neck. You know what? You feel really upset. All these are clues that the client is processing with a bias towards being kinesthetic. Kinesthetic is their primary representation. It's how they represent their world. All right, the last one is auditory digital. Auditory digital is self-talk. This is the way that we speak to ourselves, manifested in our outbound conversations. So this is something like, make up your mind. Decide what works. You know, I really like this house, and I really don't like that house. And this is a great house, and that one not so much. I like this one. I don't like that one. Think about what this would do for us. Wow, I think you're upset. Wow, I think you're excited. Right, all those are auditory digital. Those are mental conversations made manifest. So again, nobody is all one thing. The goal here is to find out what is your client's primary system and speak inside their system, because it generates rapport and demonstrates that you heard them. Right, the entire goal of this work is communication in the construct of a sales dialogue. And what's the thing that makes a communication happen? Good connection, understanding, being on the same page, getting in rapport, having what I say be heard and absorbed, having what they say be absorbed and heard on my end. And nothing makes these happen smoother than to speak the same language. They speak Japanese and you speak Italian, it's going to be a long day. So the more of these facets upon which we can align with the client, the smoother, quicker, faster, more brilliantly the connection unfolds. Right? So your client might talk loud and fast with a visual bias. Maybe. So the most powerful way to communicate with that client is loud and fast and with a visual bias. Oh my God, that looks amazing. All right. Questions, comments, anything about that? Does that sound like fun? Does that feel overwhelming? I thought of this before. Now what do I do?
This is Rick in Roseville.
Hey, Rick.
Can you explain again the difference between just audio and auditory visual?
Yeah, so audio is I hear you. Audio is what I hear. That sounds good. I hear what you're telling me. That sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Auditory digital is, I think, I wonder, I like,
Okay.
So auditory digital is kind of like the way that you speak to yourself.
Okay.
Well, this would be exciting. That should be fun. I'm excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Okay.
Like that. Decide, make up your mind, I think, I like. And then auditory is I hear. Yeah, you're welcome. Anybody else? Questions, comments? Anybody else? All right. Your rapport game homework is as you're speaking to people, simply identify, do your best to put them in one category. Remember, nobody is 100% anything. Very, very, very rare. Everybody's a little bit of everything, yet they're dominant in one. They'll be dominantly visual. They'll be dominantly kinesthetic. So whatever that is, just see if you can identify which one they're in just by listening to their word choice. There's also some other clues, too. If somebody is, for example, if somebody's primarily visual, they're usually dressed kind of sharp, right? They're usually kind of snappy dressers, maybe, right? They're well put together. If somebody's primarily auditory, these are the people that you see that never take their earbuds out, right? They always have music going on in the background, usually soft music. They're usually not acid rock fans, right, because that's really harsh. Auditory people like typically soothing, music in the background. They usually have a pleasant voice, that kind of thing. Somebody who's highly kinesthetic, they will typically, like, you'll never see a highly kinesthetic person wearing a scratchy wool sweater, right? Soft clothes, soft T-shirts, like that, right? Just some other clues. Okay, questions, comments, anything about that?
Joel?
Yes.
This is Tina with Keller Williams.
Hi, Tina.
In Fremont. So how would you know if someone is auditory digital? I didn't really get how that one pertains to other people. If you're saying I think or I wonder, how would you know that about someone else?
I don't know that there's a dress code for auditory digital.
Mm-hmm. Well, not necessarily a dress code, but to be able to identify that, that person, I mean, don't we all have...
So typically an auditory digital will be, if you're part of the KW system and you know the DISC profile, you don't have to be KW, but if you know the DISC profile, a lot of high Cs are auditory digital. So if they're really high C, there's a good chance they're auditory digital. Super smart people, CPA, engineers. I think about this. People that are really cerebral, very much in their head, are typically auditory digital. And there's no hard and fast rule. You can have a super nerd genius who happens to be highly kinesthetic. That could be too. Or that's if you've not seen the movie Temple Grandin. Highly recommend that you watch the movie Temple Grandin. She's a brilliant, brilliant autistic woman, got her PhD, brilliant story, and super genius, and freakishly kinesthetic.
Okay.
And auditory digital, both. All right, so this is the home play. Is just as you talk to people, listen for these clues and see if you can, this person's primarily visual. Oh, that looks good. That looks good. That's beautiful. Wow, this is, right, this, whatever. Right, so just see if you can identify people as you speak to them.
Joel, Sam, Valencia,
Sam.
Am getting the sense that it would be really helpful for about myself to be able to identify what other people are. I have to figure out what I am first. Is that fair?
Sure.
I don't know
that you have to figure out what you are first, yet figuring out what you are first will help you identify your bias. So if you know, for example, that you are highly visual, go back and read your journal notes from last week and see how many times it says see or saw or beautiful or pretty or right. And if you figure out your bias, I think it makes it a little bit easier to get in sync with other people because you know your bias.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Sure.
Hey Joel.
Yes.
If you're talking to someone about something visual, then I think they're likely to reply in a visual way. Like if I'm showing you pictures, you might say, wow, that looks good. If I'm talking to you about music from something, you might say, why, that sounds good. So how do you really get around that?
Well, in that scenario, you're leading the conversation, right? That's Sam's question about her bias. So if Sam is highly, for example, highly, highly visual, and she says, oh my gosh, look at this house. It's so beautiful. I love the colors. Doesn't that look gorgeous? Then whoever she's showing the picture to most likely is going to say, yeah, that really is beautiful. However, if that person, and that's because she's leading the conversation, where it's easier to find out is if I ask questions. What's important to you about buying that house? And they say, oh my God, it would just feel so good to live at the lake. That's very kinesthetic. It would feel good to live at the lake. Or, I've always wanted to live in a big, giant house. Really, what would that do for you? Oh, it would give me space and have me feel relaxed, and it would be peaceful because the kids are at the other end of the house. That's all kinesthetic. It would feel, it would be peaceful. So, if you're leading the conversation, you're totally right. And if you're in rapport, they're going to want to match you, which is great, too. Yet, the more that we can understand their communication model, the easier it is to connect.
Hey, Joel.
Awesome. Yes.
Ashley, Vegas.
Hey, Ash, in Vegas.
Hi. What do you say when you ask them, you know, what would this do for you, and they say, what do you mean? What is your way of questioning back?
I would ask them again. So if I say, so Ashley, what would it do for you to, you know, master all the tools in this class? And you say, what do you mean? I'd say, well, you're learning a bunch of very powerful tools that help you get connected with people, that help you close sales much more fluidly. So what will it mean for you to have those abilities? I'm just going to ask
it
again.
You switch it from do to mean. Like, what would this
mean for you? Well, not necessarily. Like, I mean, I just... So don't get lost in, hey, it's concrete and it has to be like this and it's like this every time. I just want to explore these topics. And if somebody says, if I say, what's important to you about this? And they go, what do you mean what's important to me about this? I go, well, you're learning some very powerful stuff. You're learning some new tools. What's important to you about learning the things that you're learning? Why did you sign up?
Okay, so
In
a real estate example, right, if they're selling a house, you just go back to what you thought their original purpose was. But do you think in that moment that you can kind of figure out what representation style they are by them, like, not really getting your question in the beginning, like, what would this do
maybe
for you, or what would this mean? Okay.
Maybe. And it might take a couple of answers to pinpoint them, maybe. Right? If I say, what's important to you about selling this house and getting out of Vegas, they might say, well, we're tired of Vegas. We're ready to leave. Okay, I'm clear that you want to leave. So what's important to you about not being in this environment anymore? All right, I'm going to ask the same question again, framed a different way, until something makes sense to me. My goal here is to understand them. And then I might have to ask two or three questions, because I'm not going to make any hard decisions based on one data point. I might have to ask two or three questions, and then I hear them saying, I feel, I want, right? Now maybe I'm going to get, okay, they're pretty kinesthetic.
Yeah, I think where I went wrong on one was not redefining, like you said, well, you're learning some powerful tools here. You know, what's that going to do for you? Like, I left that part out one time, and it took me two or three questions to get to it. And so you just spurred my, like, oh, yeah, awesome. What happens when we do that? Yeah, thanks.
Awesome. You're welcome. All right, so that's That's another tool in the rapport game. All right, so with this tool in the rapport game, we're going to take on our next language technique. So one of my favorites, this language technique that we're taking on today is called the level shift. And level shift is a shift, right? We're going to shift gears, left, right, up, whatever. My request is that you always level shift up. I always want to find something bigger, more important, more enlightening, more uplifting. I always want to move up. Right, left or right works too, but up. So the most challenging part about, in your handout it says the most challenging part of an objection. That really should say the most challenging part of any communication, right? Not just an objection, is the meaning attached. What meaning is attached to that? So, for example, if you're talking to somebody and they're really, you know, let's say, for example, they're really coming at you about the commission. So my question is their issue really about the commission? I don't, probably not, right? What's their issue really about? Well, their issue could be about, I don't want to get taken advantage of. I don't want to get screwed over. That could be what's really behind their issue. It could be, oh my gosh, I don't have much equity, and the real estate agent's going to make more money than me in the sale of the house, or I don't have enough equity to close at 6% commission. I can't sell. I got to bring money to the table. So the question is, what's the real meaning behind, so tell me about the 6% commission, because I don't think I have that margin. So is the meaning, I don't have the margin, is the meaning, you shouldn't make more than me? Is the meaning, hey, everything's negotiable, and that's what I'm going to negotiate? So the place where most of us go astray is somebody will say something, we'll attach our meaning to whatever it is that they said, and then we'll start responding and building a case around our meaning. That may not be their meaning. So herein lies the problem. Now, let's say, for example, I'm going to use an objection frame as an example. Let's say, for example, that a client brings up commission, and they have an issue with commission. And let's say that maybe they're from a country that negotiates everything, right? They go to the market, they barter for fruit, and it's just how it is in that culture. This is just the way business is done. It's not right or wrong. It's just normal. This is standard. This is how we do it. This is how my parents did it and my grandparents did it. This is how you buy and sell stuff. You negotiate. So here we go. And it's totally normal for them because this is how it's done. And yet, that's their meaning. What if your meaning is, oh, my God, they don't think I'm very good. Oh, my God, they don't see the – are you kidding me? Have you seen my track record? I'm awesome. My list of sales price ratio is the best in the city. And so the object is commission. Now, the subject for the client is we negotiate everything. That's how we are. And the subject for you is, oh, my God, they don't see my value. And so what many salespeople do here is they start defending their value. So the client brings up commission, and we say, well, hang on a second. Have you seen my marketing program? Oh, my God, I'm so good. Look at what I'm doing. And yet that wasn't their question. Why? Because you answered to your meaning and missed their meaning. So what are we going to do about that? Well, we're going to take on this topic today called level shifts. Now, level shifts are going to make sure that you and the client are at least talking about the same meaning. Right, and even if that's not the client's meaning, let's stay with the same objection, the same commission objection. Even if the client means, hey, I'm starting the negotiation process, this is a good sign, right? For somebody who grew up in this culture, hey, will you do it for less, is step one of getting the contract signed. That's a positive motion for them. You might not take it that way. You might take it as an attack and start to defend yourself. So for them, it's a step forward. For you, it's an insult. So How do we get both of us on the same page if we have different meanings? Well, we're going to use this tool called a level shift, which is at least going to communicate the meaning so we're both focused on the same thing. So the level shifts are things like, great, so what appears most important to you is blah, 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 fill in the blanks. It's, you know what, it sounds to me like. So let's use that same example. What appears most important to you is you want to make sure that you get a really good deal. Or it sounds to me like you want to make sure that you get as much profit as possible in the sale. Okay, good. I got your thing about commission. And what I hear you saying is you want to make sure that you don't leave any profit on the table. All right, so just to make this a little more fun, notice what appears, the first one, what appears most important to you. That's very visual, isn't it? How about the next one? It sounds to me like, that's pretty auditory, isn't it? You know what, it feels like, blah, 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 it's pretty kinesthetic. Oh, right, thanks for bringing that up. You know, I think I believe the real issue here is, how big is your check when the escrow closes? Right? I think the real issue is that's very auditory digital. So if you can use these and if you can even pair them with your client's VAK style, holy smokes are these powerful. And what it does is in the VAK style, it generates more rapport. It guarantees that you and the client are talking about the same subject. Now here's the question, based on that same example. If a client says, I want you to cut your commission, or will you do it for this commission, or whatever, however it's delivered. My question to you is it really about the commission? Is it really about the commission? I would argue that it's not about the commission. Well, if they say, what about the commission, and I'm arguing it's not about the commission, what is it about? Well, the commission is a stepping stone. What it's really about is profit, net profit. How much do I get to keep? And so whenever somebody brings up commission, I'm not really excited about discussing commission. I am excited about discussing profit. So when somebody says commission, it's a reflex for me now. I say, great, I totally get that. And I think the real issue here is how big is your check when the smoke settles? Like when the escrow closes, how much gets deposited into your account? And they go, yeah, that's right. So what did I just do? I just level shifted them from commission to net profit. As a salesperson, which one of those conversations is more empowering to both you and the client? I'd rather talk about profit all day long. Why? Because it's the real thing. It's the real measure. All right, so look at these. It looks like you want. So are you saying this? Are you asking that? It feels like. The real question is what that really means is. I'm just level shifting these to a new place. All right, I'm going to rip through these examples really quick, and then we'll practice and role play and whatever. So the first example in your handout says, maybe I did this one already, hey, we'd like to ask for a commission discount, or will you do it for less, or however that asks. And this is not a script, a possible response would be, and notice that one, we'd like to ask for a discount. That's auditory, right? Ask. So I'm going to answer auditory. Of course. I appreciate wanting to save money, and it sounds like you're committed to net as much money as possible, right? And they go, yeah. So notice we just level shifted from commission to net. Next one says, you know what? We just don't feel like making the decision tonight. Feel kinesthetic. So not a script. A possible response is, yeah, I know it's a really big decision, and I'm sensing kinesthetic. You still have some uncertainty about something. So about what specifically are you not 100% comfortable? So what was that? That was a level shift from hesitation to finding out their real issue. I don't want to talk about, we don't want to make the right decision, the wrong decision tonight. We don't want to make that decision. I want to talk about, well, what is it? What's in the way? I want to level shift them from hesitation to discovery. Next one, we'd like to see a few other realtor marketing plans before we make a decision. We'd like to see, what's that? Visual. So not a script, but a possible response is, well, naturally, you want to see a plan that will help get your home sold. So what are you hoping to see that we didn't cover? What are we doing there? We're level shifting from seeing more competition to their criteria to move forward. I don't want to talk about the competition. I want to know what's going to make this client happy to move forward. All right, next one is true story. This is no kidding, almost exactly what my father said to get me to go to college. I said, I don't want to go to college. You kidding me? I've been doing homework my whole life, and the program's impacted. I'll be 25 by the time I get out of school. Audio digital. And my dad said, yep, I know, school can be challenging. And the real question is, would you rather be 25 and working for minimum wage or 25 with a high-paying career that you love? And I was like, well, I want that 25. He's like, good, sign here. Right? So that's how my dad closed me on going to college. All right, the last example is self-talk. By the way, if your self-talk is not supporting you, then when you write your home play sentences for this course, include your self-talk in the new dialogues that you're, the muscle memory of building these new self-talk dialogues. So one of the things that I've heard people say is, I don't need to lead generate today because I have a buyer. Right? I have a buyer today at 9 o'clock. That's why I lead generate, to get clients, and I have a client today. So therefore, I don't need to lead generate. So why not level shift yourself? Yeah, I do have a buyer. What that really means is my lead generation is working. Since I'm starting to build momentum, I'd really like to capitalize on this. Book more appointments, even if they're for next week. What is that level shift? Level shifting from having an appointment to being committed to my own business. So the level shift process should, in my world, should be really fun. All right, so how was that for a crash course? Interesting, fun? Questions,
Joel?
Comments, examples? Yes.
Quick question.
By the way, hang on, I'm gonna interrupt really quick. By the way, when you guys say, hey, Joel, like I'm clear that you're talking to me, please, if you would, until I memorize all your voices, if you would say your name and where you're from, because I want all of you to know all of you so you can send referrals to each other. That would be awesome.
Sorry about that.
So, okay, yes.
Jonathan Asbell, Keller Williams in the Palm Beaches.
Awesome. Thanks, Jonathan.
I feel as though the second pass, after you ask that first question, that the next step is the more challenging one, like after they respond to that. That seems to be the one where, for me,
for example,
it causes the most confusion. For example, so Joel, it seems as though you really like to teach this class because you get something out of it.
Okay, so I want to lead that with a question. So that's
let me try something
I'm
else.
Missing, I'm
try
missing
a
the context.
One.
Yeah.
I'm trying to. Okay, let me. So Joel, you say you don't want to sell your house at 4%. I'm just trying to think. I'm just trying to come up with something right where you respond, and then that response is the one that seems to be the most difficult part. It's after you get that response.
So what, Jonathan? What I'm sensing is that you think that you're going to get stuck on round two.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So then, make sure that you leave them somewhere. Like, let's. I think I really like this one. Sorry for beating it to death, but I want you all to get full commissions. So let's go back to the commission one. Somebody says, "Hey, I want a commission discount," and then you say, some sort of level shift, right? Totally get that you want a commission discount, and it sounds like you want to net as much money as possible, right? And the client goes, like, and they're either going to say, well, yes, I do, and you go, okay, great. Let's talk about netting you as much money as possible. So we just shifted them to a whole new conversation. We're no longer talking about commission. Now we're talking about net. I think that your fear is, what if they say, well, yes, I want as much money as possible, and that starts with you not getting 6%. Is that what you're afraid of, something like that?
It could be that, or it could be, I don't pay real estate agents that much. I pay 3%.
Okay, great. So now normally I wouldn't use the same technique over and over and over again, but we're practicing this one, so I'm going to use this one. So, Jonathan, I totally get that you don't normally pay real estate agents that much. And I think the real issue here is not how much you're going to pay me for listing your house. Isn't the real issue how much profit I'm going to get you for selling the house? Isn't that more important?
And then I might say something like, well, of course it is, which is why I really don't want to use a realtor.
Yeah, I totally get that you're resistant to using a realtor. I get that. And what if that means that not using a realtor means you're going to save some commission? But what if you save 3 or 4 points in commission and give up 6 or 8 or 10 points on the sales price? Is saving a point or two in commission that important to you?
Never going to happen. I've done this so many times.
Yeah. And so if you've done this by yourself, it's awesome that you've done this by yourself. And what I'm sensing is that you're committed to doing this on your own, yet how do you know if doing it on your own is getting you all the profit? The piece that what I'm feeling that you're missing is unless you hire a broker like me and expose the property to everybody, how will you know if you found the one buyer who's going to pay the most?
You know, I could go on with this, but I don't want to. I just wanted to see how you.
Well, so here's the thing, too. So could I. And so I'm not trying to make you wrong. I'm not trying to prove myself right. I'm just saying, well, I totally get that you feel that way. And it sounds like you're thinking about this. I totally get that you feel that way, and it feels to me like you're focused on doing this work yourself, even if it costs you money. It sounds like you're committed to, you know, not pay a commission, even if you give up some profits. Right? I can play this game all day long.
Right, and then we'll get into like the where they can get aggressive. It depends where these people are from, but they can get aggressive and say, "Look, I don't need a psychologist."
Great. I'm not interested in being your psychologist. I'm a real estate broker, and I've made a career out of getting people more for their houses than most other agents in the town, and that's what you want. You want to sell your house, and you want as much money as possible. So
where are you coming
like
from,
you
Joel?
You want to be... Say again?
Where are you seeking to go? Where are you seeking to bring this to come up with these things?
Well, I don't know if they're talk. I just want to elevate the conversation up for two reasons. One, I want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing, right? If they're talking about commission, then they have a meaning. Save money, negotiate, get a good deal. They have a meaning. And I have a meaning. They're cheapskates. They don't trust me. They don't like me. They've not seen my marketing. We have different meanings. So intention number one is that we agree in the conversation – like that we're talking about the same meaning. So their definition for saving commission and my definition for reducing commission are two different things. So we're never going to make headway if we're having two different conversations. In order to make progress in the conversation, I want to say, hey, I totally get that you want to discount the commission. And what I think is the most important thing here is how much money you get to keep when the escrow is done. Would you agree with that? And they go, yeah. So what happened? I just got an objection. Will you cut the commission? And in one technique, hey, it sounds like you want to make as much money as possible. They go, yeah, that's right. In one technique, we're in agreement. And we're talking about profit instead of commission, which is more empowering to the client. So I don't know where I'm going. I want to just make sure that we're talking about the same thing and we're moving forward. Is that helpful, Jonathan?
Yeah, I guess it is. And I don't want to take over this conversation, but it is. I just sometimes it feels like you kind of don't know where to go next with it.
Well, so a little tool for the trade for you is my request is that you start saying, sometimes I feel like I don't know where to go next. Because me, Joel, I'm very comfortable that I have no idea where I'm going. I'm just going forward, and we're going to find the solution somewhere down the path. So if you don't know where you're going, then stay tuned, man. We're just barely at the beginning of this course. Right? We're just at week 3, man. We're just getting warmed up.
Thank you.
I wish I could teach you guys everything in 1 week. The price would go way up. I could charge you $10,000 and give it to you in a day, and sadly, I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I'm working on it.
Hey, Joel.
Yes.
Joel, it's Ashley Vegas. Can I make a quick recommendation, Jonathan?
Of course.
Is Jonathan still with us?
I am. The mute was off. Go ahead.
Jonathan, have you read the book Be the Solution?
Oh, that's so good.
Sounds like a good one. I'll write it down.
Yeah, that's Daryl Rutherford's book, right?
Yeah, I think
that
is his. You wrap that book around this learning, Jonathan, and all that resistance you have about what you think they're going to say and what you're up against will get removed, and you'll be able to move forward.
And, Jonathan, do not let the author's photo detour you. He's a funny-looking little old man. And he should not have put his photo on the book. Do not let that detour you. The book is awesome. Is that true, Ashley?
Yeah.
Thank
totally.
You, guys.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
He should have done the realtor trick and put like a 20-year-old glamour photo on there. That would have helped.
Right?
I guess you didn't see the cover of Realtor magazine lately.
No. Who's that?
It was terrible.
I did not see the cover of Realtor. No, I did not. So, all right, everybody, we are, according to my clock, we're a minute over. So sorry for going a minute long. Practice. So put in your schedule every day in the morning to write these out. Literally, write down things that people say to you and practice level shifting them. When you write, you see your writing. You feel yourself write. You're doing something physical. We say them out loud as we write them, so you're getting your eyes and your ears and your hand. Everything's involved. You do all three of those things together, writing. That's why journaling is so powerful. You learn quicker. So time block 20 minutes a day and write these out. You'll be blown away at how fast this will become your new habits. So there you have it. So thank you, everybody. Have an awesome week. Go make a difference in the world. Help as many people as you can, and go be the solution.
Thanks, Joel.
Talk to you all next week. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Ashley. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Jonathan, all those that chipped in and role-played and asked questions today. Special thanks to all of you.
Thanks, Joel.
Yep. Bye-bye, everybody. See you next week.